Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My guest today is Thomas Bocard. He's the Senior Vice President of Sales at Global Data PLC. They're a provider of data analytics and insights on the world's largest industries. Tom, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, appreciate it, Derek. Thanks for having me on.
Do you mind kicking us off and just tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you end up becoming a leader? Like, what do you like about it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, I started as, you know, a lot of, I think, sales leaders do, as an individual contributor. You know, was definitely, you know, competitive, found myself kind of at the top of the board a lot. But for me, I was always one of those people that had to work harder than everyone else in the room. It was never, you know, natural or easy, but I had some really good mentors and surrounded myself with people that taught me it was a real process. And that is what really clicked me onto sales, is that, you know, it's much like sports, where you can kind of, you know, train certain aspects of it, and if, with consistent, you know, practice and preparation, you'll get better. And that got me really excited about sales. I mean, I loved winning. I loved, you know, helping clients, closing deals, all the you know, the fun part of it. But, you know, I started to find myself enjoying the process more than the actual destination that I was getting to. And that's when it started clicking me. I was like, well, look, I enjoy doing this. You know, what if I could start helping other people do it? And, you know, also amplifying my successes. So like, I'm only one person. If I'm leading the board, closing, you know, a lot of deals, that's great. But if I can get a team of people doing that, you know, I've just kind of grown my value and, you know, appeal at my company and in the market space. But B, I'm impacting the lives of those people, you know, really helping them go. And at the same time, they're going to help me continue to grow and develop. So I think for me, one thing with sales was always like, you know, it wasn't just like I need to close more deals. I needed to constantly grow and develop and face new challenges, because otherwise it became real stagnant quickly. And going into coaching and leadership with the, you know, it really helped the growth, not just from like developing those skill sets, but from actually working with those individuals. I'd learn from them, their experiences, their challenges. So, you know, it was one of those processes that started slowly with it, where I went into kind of a selling management, a mentorship role, selling and managing the player coach, and then, you know, saw that I did in fact enjoy it, and that, you know, popped me into the sales management world. And I guess the rest is, I won't say history, because it's not quite that run yet, but that's what I've been doing for probably the last, I guess, 12, 15 years or so now.
Okay. What are some of the early, let's say, mistakes that you've made or things you wish you had done differently?
I mean, there's a lot of them probably from there, but it's, you know, I think initially off the bat, it was taking the same approach to management that I did to when I was running my own book, right? So it was, you know, really, really kind of living and dying by pipeline and focusing on, you know, the activities and not necessarily, you know, what the activities were telling me. So what I mean by that is, it's almost like I would just look at the numbers and it's like, well, how many, you know, demos are booked, or how many phone calls or emails went out, or how many props, right? Which is all important to look at, but I wasn't doing the money ball analysis. I wasn't looking for fracture points, and I wasn't coaching to those numbers. So I wasn't seeing, like, you're booking demos, but you're not completing them. So what? Who are you booking them with? How far out are they going? You know, I wasn't peeling the onion back, right? Or you're completing a ton of demos, but you're not getting props, or you're getting a ton of props, but you're not closing anything. Like, where is the fracture point that we need to really dive in on and teach and train? So it's, because I think a lot of people now, and there's great books on it where it's, you know, the data I think it's the data management code or something of that nature. Yes.
The orange book?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 Thank you. So like, that book actually tells you what to do with it. But I think people have such a, it's like, well, I'm just going to look at the data, the stats tell me, you know, money ball, right? We apply that. It's like, well, what do you do with it? Because I was just like, I'm like, yeah, I know my stats in and out. I know how many deals are in the pipeline. I know what the KPIs are. But I was using it more from like a forecasting, and I was managing up with it as opposed to coaching the team to it. So it's really, it's understand that as a manager, it's, you know, coaching comes first, I think. So, and the difference with coaching and training is training, you tell them how to do it. Coaching is you constantly show them how to do it. You measure them against that. You dive into the specifics. That's when you're in the batting cages you're working on hitting a curveball, or you're working on hitting the fastball, identifying it, getting better and better at that, doing, you know, 100 swings, 500 swings, and then moving on to the next phase. You know, you taught him how to swing the bat and when the ball comes in, but now you're showing the specifics of how to react in the scenarios, and you're creating into that muscle memory. So when I started, I wasn't doing that. I was running fast and hard, and was like, just the numbers are good. We get more numbers, we get higher numbers, and it'll keep growing from there. And people were burning out or they weren't succeeding. So I think that was something that I, you know, you got to take your time to move quickly, I think, when you're in the management role, especially in the beginning. And it's
before you start like kind of going all that, you start to look at where do you want to get to, you know, and you're reverse engineering it. So it's a lot different than when you're a sales rep and say, well, I want to earn $100,000 in commission this year, $200,000, or I want to close $1 million in business. And well, how many deals does that mean I need to close, and how many props, blah, blah, blah. You need to do that on a much larger scale with your team. And you need to see where your team is and say, okay, well, I got 3 reps that are, they're middle of the pack. Well, I need at least one of them to be moved to the top tier in order for us to grow in the right way. So what do I need to focus on with that individual? How do I get her from a, you know, kind of middle of the pack to the top of the leaderboard this year? What are the skills we're going to work on? So it's really, really, you know, looking into the what the numbers are telling you and coaching to the successes of that. So I think that's one thing that straight off the bat for me, it's like you just slow down when you get in there. Take a look at everything that's going on. See where the objectives are. What are the players you have to work with from that side? Where are the strengths? Where are the weaknesses? You know, coach to their weaknesses so they can get into the strength, support the strength so you can kind of replicate and, you know, build off of that. But really then just take your time so you're building your system, because there is, you know, sales management is just like a sales process, but it's just on a grander scale. And so you have to, for me, it took me a couple of years to realize that I need to have a system in place in order to do this. Because now you're getting pulled in 15 different directions. You don't have as much time as you did as a, you know, individual contributor, right? Like you can't go to happy hour. Well, nobody goes to happy hour now, right? But you can't crush it in a 9 to 5. There's more time that's needed unless you have a proper system in place and you really kind of organize accordingly.
What are some keys to having a good system in place for managing people?
So I think, you know, you have to understand the individuals, right? And I think it's creating the right culture within your team that can kind of support what your end goal is, but then coaching the individuals to that appropriate. Because not everyone cares about money, right? Not everyone in sales wants to be at the top of the leaderboard. You know, some people they're not the extroverts, they're introverts. So you have to understand kind of what's going to motivate them and what's going to drive them from there. But understanding that is just one piece of it, because the other part is what are their goals and what are they working towards? What do they want? You know, is it career growth, earnings growth? You know, they want to just be a bigger part of the whole. They want to be a big contributor to what, you know, the company's doing or supporting the clients that you sell to. So you have to understand all of that, you know, at an individual level, because then you can create the right culture within the team itself. And then I think from the team side, something that I've always been pushing and have always really worked to have is what I call it's a collaborative competition within the culture, you know, and I typically what I'll do is I have account-based sales as the, you know, the way we develop territory. So there's not, you know, 5 reps going after the same company. It kind of immediately cuts out that, you know, that cutthroat potential of the culture, right? It's so they
fighting over leads and
yeah. So you'd be a lot more collaborative and helping each other and sharing skill sets, because you're not like, well, I don't want to tell Derek my tricks because he's going to go use it and get the accounts that I'm trying to sell. It's more of like, right, well, I'm going to help Derek because he's going to help me. You know, the rising tide raises all ships mentality, right? Like the better we are, the better we'll get, you know, and that culture can be created. But again, it comes back to the individuals though. If you're understanding where they're at, where they're going, what drives them, what motivates them, it kind of plays into each other.
So we can come back to collaborative competition in a minute, because I think I want to get a lot more into that. But can you talk just a little more about your system for, you know, I'm really interested in hearing how you set that up. So you get to know your people, what motivates them. I know that I'm breezing over this, but like, you need to understand them. What's the culture like? What are your people like? How do you, what do you do next? How do you make sure that you use that? Are you a notebook guy? Like, what do you like?
Yeah, so I have different notebooks for like all the various meetings that I have. So that's one thing that's helped me. So like, you basically, to give you an idea that I can show you from all the drawers on my desk here, but it's, so I have one book for one-to-ones, right? And in that I'll have different sections marked off for the reps and the managers that I meet with on a one-to-one basis. So A, you know, for me, I go before the meetings, I review what we spoke about last time. Make sure that, you know, when they come, they're coming prepared with that. You know, I, for the reps that report directly into me, I also, I've set up in Salesforce. So like their pipeline reports automatically get sent to me the morning that we have our meetings. So I kind of review everything, get a status flow from that to see where we are. But also in those notebooks, I'll keep track of the meetings, you know, how many kids do they have? What are they like? What are their motivating things? What, you know, where's the their vacation spot, what's going on with them, some of the personal things. So that's important to them. So I can remember that as we're speaking towards these different aspects. So I have a notebook on that, which is key, because otherwise you're like all over the place, right? I got a notebook just with like notes, just general notes that come up, whether it's I'm on calls with reps, just some thoughts come to mind, whatever kind of BS things is that book. I got a book for product trainings, a book for, you know, sales process trainings. I'm trying to look to see what the other ones are that are on here. I think those are pretty much the ones that I deal with. That's all those. So I got like the random one for notes, but the one-to-one, that is key. You know, and some people, they'll keep great records in, I don't know, Excel or no, but I'm a paper and pen. It's a little easier. And it's pretty cool because then at like the end of the year or the end of the quarter, go back and look at like, okay, what did we say our goal was at the beginning of the quarter? You know, and we'll track towards it throughout it, but I like showing them like, hey, look, on October 1st, you said you wanted to write $1 million by the end of this quarter. Well, guess what? We're entering December. You're already over $1 million. So what are we going to do? We're going to drive, right? Like, so it's great from that side. The other piece I would say is it's absolutely, I've kind of moved away from writing to-do lists. And what I do is now things that I need to do or I want to do, I put it in my calendar. So I'll block off a half an hour for that task, you know, and sometimes they'll get moved, right? Like some things get pushed and to going back to baseball analogy, I don't know why I'm using baseball so much today, Derek, by the way.
you missed it, like, right? It's just not a regular year.
Yeah. But like, so if I move it three times, it's basically, it's like three strikes. It's like, obviously it's not important. So then it's like, right. Well, let's move on. Why hold that on me? Right. So, but I think like that time blocking and stuff helps because as your teams grow as a manager, as your demands of you grow, you know, you still have those blocks in there. So you know that you're going to meet with those individuals at least once that week, you know, individually, right? You're going to meet with the team at least a couple times during the week because it's on the calendar. And those are things that you can't move, right? And unless your boss is asking for your time, well, then you can move, right? But you move them and you have to. Those are like the non-negotiables. You can't push them or miss them. The other to-dos and strategy stuff, that stuff can be worked in. So I think, you know, it's really adhering to those commitments to the individual time, supported by notebooks and like the Salesforce reports or whatever you're using to kind of give you all your stats. It keeps you in tune with that. So you're not always having like recap meetings with them. You're starting to have strategy meetings and you can really impact them. So that those systems have helped me tremendously through the years. And when I first started, I was just running around like a chicken with my head off. Like, what are the biggest deals that are coming up? Let me get on the phones. Let me help. Right. And it's like, what's the say? It's like, I want to teach them how to fish.
Right.
As opposed to like actually fishing for them and giving them the food, you know? So it's like, mm-hmm. And that starts to free up your time. So you can really start to support them more. And some people may be listening and thinking like, well, as my team grows, I'm not going to have enough time to meet with everyone or keep track of this stuff. It's like, well, you go through in the meetings that you have and you say, look, this is what we said we're going to focus on. These are the main takeaways. So by next week when we meet, I want you to really, you know, do this and, you know, send me an email kind of committing to the timelines you're going to do it like after the meeting. So then you can pull that up and say, well, where are we? Did you book those meetings? Did you practice that skill? Did you do this or whatever? So like there's a lot of different ways you can play it from there. But that's the, I guess, the framework of the system that I use to make sure that I'm working with everyone as an individual. And then within part of the team, because I will sprinkle in team meetings to that nature as well throughout the week.
Excellent. And so what I want to come back to collaborative competition now. So I love this concept, right? I'm somebody who believes that we overdo competition in sales. Like everyone's competitive, not everyone, but it's a competitive profession as it is. Some competitions are cool, but like constant competitions all the time with each other, I don't think we need that as much as I've sometimes seen it done. And I like this collaborative competition kind of concept. So aside from the way that you assign territories you described, what are some other things that you do to encourage that culture?
So some of that comes back to those team meetings that I was talking about that we'll hold on the weekly, bi-weekly basis or what have you. Part of those are, so they'll be centered around different training aspects. So it's, you start to, as you see the strengths of the individuals from a skill set or a mindset or an organizational bit, which maybe kind of flows across both, you kind of start to make them the experts in that sector. And you give them, and say, hey, Derek, I'd love for you to come, this meeting, show people how you've set up your cadences. How's that initial email you sent has been killer. Can you walk and train people through how you kind of compose it for all your accounts, how you do it in an efficient way? So you give them ownership. It's a great way to test out, like, hey, who are my future leaders, right? Who are the ones that enjoy this and go there? So there's multi-facets to it, but, then all of a sudden you start hearing and you start, I used to when we were in the office, and you would start to see it a little more where people would be like, hey, can you help me write this email? And you're like, this is great. You're building that real camaraderie there. So that helps with the collaboration, right? Success stories, love sharing those, like, the big deal successes. Hey, how'd the deal come about? Go that. It gives people a little more props and, support there. The challenge that I find in both these scenarios, though, is making sure it's not becoming like admin intensive to them. Because if you do it too much, then I feel like people just get, they're like, let me do my job. I want to make money. I want to close deals. I got a quota. I'm not hitting because you're asking me to do all these administrative stuff. So when it comes to those training parts, I'll tell them to take real examples. They're like, you don't need to come prepared or like put together a slide deck if you don't want. Like, we want to focus on those emails. Just pull up three or four that you just did, or you're going to send three or four out tomorrow. Do them in front of the group and they can ask questions as they're going through it. So it's like, you're going to do the work anyways. Do it in a forum where other people can see it and ask for it. That's been real effective. The deal successes, sometimes, unfortunately, I'm like, just talk through. I want to say, how did you find the lead? How did you get it in play? Let's talk about some of the things that went through there. And we'll try to kind of like bullet point and share it around. But that's one thing I think that, especially people that are new into management or those things, you just got to keep in the back of your mind is like, to create this collaboration, kind of give people these different ownerships, you don't want to be adding excessive work to them where A, they'll use it as an excuse for why they're not doing what
performing,
measuring them against, right? But B, they could start to resent it and then not do it. And then, either way, it's a loss. So you just got to be cognizant of that through the process. And the other bit I think too is it's not always like individuals. Like, that is the beauty of sales, right? Like, because it is, you're part of a team. But your results are also dependent on you. So like, I used to, when I grew up, I wrestled in high school. So like you had this whole team stuff, but when I'm out there on the mat by myself, like my team, they can cheer me on and yell what to do. But if I'm on my back fights, there's nothing they can do to help me out. Right. Like, so sales is similar to that, but what you can create is almost then sometimes you create many competitions where you set teams up and you'll say like, hey guys, let's run a comp on, and you can be KPI driven or it could be deal driven. It's just other ways to, maybe you can bring people together that don't always, work together. See if that can build some bonds there. It's another way where I try to play strengths and weaknesses off it too. Like if I know someone has been doing really well in the, top of funnel, but struggling kind of mid-funnel or, you know, at the close part. I got someone else who's having the inverse of that. It's, you know, it's not really rocket science, but a lot of these competitions can knock out a lot of the development and training aspects that would take up a tremendous amount of your time as a manager to do appropriately. So kind of do that two birds with one stone, if that makes sense. So it's, again, you're collaborating, but then you got like, oh, hey guys, like whoever wins, you know, you'll get a couple of $50 Drizzly, you know,
right,
gifts or Amazon cards, whatever, right? So those are different ways that we do it. And then sometimes, you know, we'll do inner office things where we'll take like my sales team and we could put them against sales teams in a different division. So then it's just like, it's, you know, us versus them, you know, the Zoom chats, you start talking shit to each other. Excuse me. You start talking trash. So it goes from there. But, you know, I think creating that culture though has been a big thing for me because it brings everyone together.
You know, it takes like what is that individual sport at the end of the day and does give it that team camaraderie. And I feel like when you look at successful sales organizations across the, you know, different spectrum of, you know, products, SaaS, tech, sorry about that, across all the spaces here, when you start peeling it back, they have really strong teams in there. They have a good team environment, you know, and that for me as a manager has also created a lot of loyalty, you know, from people that have worked with me through the years. So it's, you know, these are all, I think, important building blocks to a successful career in management, particularly in the sales world. So that's those are some areas that I found really, really helpful from that. Does that help with the collaborative competition?
Yeah, I love that. That's great. And I think that plays into, you know, you'd previously mentioned the manager who feels like they don't have time for all these meetings. And what you just described is one of the ways to mitigate that. Like, you don't have to plan every training. If you have a team of 8 people, of 10 people, one of them is not going to, you know, is going to be underperforming. One's going to be new. Can you get 6 or 8 people to run one training per quarter on something they're already really good at? It saves you hours, right? It strengthens the culture. Yeah, you can't be an expert on everything. So I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I think that's been really, really helpful across our ends. And it's just time as a manager is the most difficult thing to balance. Because you're not just managing your teams, you got to manage your bosses. You know, it's managing up and down, right? And the biggest thing with managing down, it's you don't want it to be that. You want it to be, you know, you've probably seen the old pictures where it's like boss versus leader, right? Boss is in the chair pointing down, the leader's at the front holding the rope. Like, you want to be a leader with them. And leaders are people, yeah, you will hold them accountable and you want it, and you're going to tell them, but you got to explain to them why. It's like, I want these KPIs, but not because we're, you know, it's activity driven and it's a, you know, stick or a carrot. It's because, you know, if you hit these numbers, it's going to result in these, you know, this for you. So if you do some analysis and go through with them individually, look, you need to close a deal out of every 5 props you get out. If you're hitting two deals a month, that's getting you to the highest tier of commission. So the number you need to focus on is 10 props every month. That's where you got to focus. If you do that, it's going to relate based on your average deal size, it's going to be this amount of revenue for you, which translates to this much in commission. Extrapolate it, right? So this is why I think it's so important for you to focus on these numbers. And now to get those 10 props, if we go a little bit further back, you need to do, you know, you got to do 15 demos. In order for you to do 15 demos, you got to book 20 demos. Now, I'm using kind of easy layers, and these numbers aren't great. So hopefully it's a little bit better ratios, but it's important to do that stuff for them. And then from the leader perspective too, what I still do is I'll get up, I'm trying different routes to market with them, you know, like trying out new tactics, testing different parts of, you know, different messaging, you know, whether it's what we're actually saying in emails or on the phone, you know, or if we're using it on LinkedIn, or if we're using Drift or, you know, Vidyard or whatever, like these are very new things to my teams. And I think when you're, as a leader, if you're out there in front, showing them how to do it, testing it with them, and they're seeing that you're actually, you know, your sleeves are rolled up, your hands are in the dirt, you're not just kind of sitting behind an Excel sheet, it gets a lot of respect from the team, and it gets a lot of buy-in from that side. So it's all that collaboration. Isn't just your team. It's you're a part of it. You're driving the collaboration, but you're in the thick of it as well.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. And I especially like how you talked to your point on explain why I'm expecting these KPIs. So you tell somebody they got to send out 10 proposals. They don't really understand that that's because 10 proposals lead to two deals or whatever. Then you suddenly get somebody who does 10 proposals that first week and they're garbage. And they're people who should never buy. Yeah. You know, like, okay, 10 good proposals will actually get me two deals. I'm looking for 10 people who could buy, because that's two people who will buy, is a different mindset, even though you're telling them the same, you know, the same number.
100%. From that part there, sometimes I even take it further to them where I'll be like, look, so for every prop you're sitting down, you're earning $1,000. Let's say if they earn like 10 grand in commission from two deals, right?
Right.
Every prop is $1,000. Or you can even go further back to like demos booked and say, you know, every demo book earns you $100 or whatever. You know, obviously as you go further back, the numbers get lower, but you know, it's actually, you know, so you're reverse engineering to show them like why you're asking for these numbers, because what it gets in the end. But then you can put a dollar amount for the activities. So it's like, you know, that's there. And I like to go through that math with them, you know, and I think it's always good to do it at the beginning of a year, probably halfway through the year, remind them at those point. You know, if you're doing it every month or quarter, it probably loses its luster, but you should make sure they know those numbers and they're looking towards that and they're going at it. And then when they hit those and they get the commission statements, you can see, like, look, see, here it is. This is what we worked at here. You know, the proof is there. And if you're basing it off the numbers that they've done, then it works. And if you're dealing with a new rep, you know, where you don't have those numbers, well, you have people on your team, mm-hmm. you can use them, you know, and you can say that, like, look, this is how it works out. You know, now this rep I'm talking about is closing at a 20% rate. You're 2 weeks in the seat, you're probably going to close at a little less. So, you know, for every 10, you're going to close one. Okay, so let's focus on getting the 10 first, getting consistent. Then we can start building it. Either we look and say, well, do we need to focus on getting you 20? Or how can we refine the skills so that you are closing 2 out of 10 then, instead of having to do twice the work? So it all kind of works from there. But I think, again, it kind of circles back to what I was saying in the beginning to you, Derek, where it's like, when you put it into the management seat from the front, and you know, if you haven't been trained or coached on this, or even managed by like a sales manager that is kind of working on this aspect to like watch, you're kind of just running. You're running fast. You don't know where you're going. You're going 20 different directions, and you kind of focus on these. Where if you're really slowing down, you're inspecting what you expect with the reps, and you're explaining to them through the process, and you're diving into the outcomes or the fracture points that the numbers are showing you, it all translates to a different ballgame for you. You know, and I think for me, again, coming back to the beginning, I didn't know that stuff at first. I was lucky though, I had some good managers. So like they were like, whoa, what are you doing? Like let's reel it in and we can, you know, let's take it kind of step by step. But those things take a little bit.
Yeah. Man, I feel like you were lucky to have somebody right there for you when you got promoted. A lot of people don't have that, you know, or they get promoted in, you know, suddenly a huge team or very, very early stage companies, which kind of tells me that companies, my read on the whole situation, that plus conversations and just my observations are that there seems to be a pretty severe shortage of sales leaders in the market. Even after COVID and a bunch of companies just shedding 50% of their workforce or whatever, there still seem to be not that many out there. Why do you think that is?
I think it's, you know, a lot of it is they haven't had that training that's there. You know, I think there are a few greats that are out there. You know, I was definitely fortunate enough to be in an organization where my immediate boss, like, he was great. You know, he kind of, like, he mentored me, taught me a ton. I'm still very close with him to this day. But he was a very process-oriented person, you know, and taught that. And then that even came from our global head of sales at the time, too. I think what you see, I mean, and I think some of this is a, you know, it's a, I guess, a knockoff from all these startups that, you know, they have really emerged. You know, startups weren't that big when I was kind of coming up in, or at least they weren't in New York at the time, or I at least didn't have access to them. So I don't know. It just wasn't there. But I think when startups really started blowing up, a ton of technology started coming on the market, all these different companies, you're getting people, you know, that were thrown into these sales management roles that were really good salespeople. And they went out and they got hired up. They got promoted, which is great, right? But then the people that they were reporting to were like product engineers, or, you know, they were the innovators behind that. So the CEOs are these people that they never sold, you know? So it just started this cycle of, you know, sales managers that were burning out, where they weren't being successful. And that's why I think you see the tenure of a VP of sales these days, it's like 18 or 19 months, I think, which is like, that's
insane,
crazy, you know, like that's going to happen. You know, sometimes you'll take the wrong role. Sometimes the company, you know, shit happens, but it shouldn't be the average like that.
Right.
That is a really low number to me. So, but I think that has been from this, because it's like, then they'll, so, hey, you were a VP of sales at so-and-so startup. You're only there for 12 months. Well, that's 6 months longer than our last VP of sales. So come on in. But they're not learning. They're not being taught from that end. They're kind of just like, you know, they're stringing it together, and it's just very difficult, I think. So I think it's kind of been this like self-perpetuating, you know, cycle, unfortunately, and it's hard to come out. You know, so I definitely was fortunate in that, but I think that's where, you know, like cracking the sales management code, or there's a ton of books, ton of resources out there now that people can look at to read to upskill, right? To get better at that process. You know, there's a ton on, I mean, I don't know, maybe LinkedIn, maybe not LinkedIn is a place to go, depending on, you know, what the feed is. You don't necessarily know who's telling you what's coming through, but there are some good people on LinkedIn that have the experience, you know, and there's, you know, there's online courses that are setting up. There's a lot more, I feel like, due to COVID and all this stuff, like there's a lot more of virtual networking that's happening, you know, I think people can get access now more to people that actually, you know, have experience in sales leadership or management, both, I guess, right? And they can learn from different people's processes, from their systems. And it's, you know, you kind of just piece together things that work for you and for your company and the demands. But it's, I think you have to go out and seek it, you know, especially if you're reporting into a CEO that has no sales background. This is their first company, or, you know, they're not teaching you the process of how to be a sales manager, then you need to go out there and you need to up that skill from there. Like, I mean, I'm constantly reading new books. I'm reading, I'm practicing, I'm learning from my bosses now. Like, I've been fortunate. I moved into sales management and had great mentors and managers, you know, there for me. My organization now is tremendous in that regards. I've been, you know, blessed to have really, really strong managers and leaders ahead of me that, you know, continue to like challenge and press me, but they teach the ways behind it. But I don't just rely on that either. Like, I'm out there I want to be better and continue, you know, not just for myself, but for my team.
Right. Get better every day. There's no point in reinventing the wheel, right? Even if you're at a startup, there's thousands of people have figured out how to do this. Go learn from them. Yeah. Well, Tom, what would you say is your superpower as a leader?
I mean, there's a lot, I think, that we kind of touched on that would tie into that from there.
Okay.
I think, you know, because I think one of those things, like organizing, so like you kind of build those bonds with the individuals, So it's really like, look, we're in this together. We're side by side. It's not, you know, you might report to me in kind of the hierarchy, but like I report to you. I support you. So try to really create that even playing field and like accountability across the way.
Like the servant leadership kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's that. It's, you know, because I mean, for me, like I just look to try to prop them up and put them in the best position to succeed and help, you know, whether it's a mindset, an organizational aspect, skill set, wherever they need those gaps. I try to find them for them, you know, and point it out in a way that's instructive for everyone to help improve that there. So I think really building those bonds with the individual is such a strong thing to do. Because again, you want everyone kind of going to the same, you know, in the same direction, having that, you know, that collaboration throughout the way. And a lot of that also comes from transparency. Like I let the team is very clear on here are the goals. This is what we need to achieve as a company, but this is where we fit into it. You know, individually, this is obviously they know what their targets are, but you know, when you have people that start asking you, hey, what else do we need to hit our number for this quarter? What do you need to hit your numbers for this quarter? When I have people asking me that, I'm like, this is a beautiful
I did right.
You know,
I get it. Like
I'm like everything that I think that has really been kind of a superpower for me. And it's like, you know, a lot of that is it's, you know, I'm a very optimistic person, an eternal optimist, you know, and some of that is contagious. Sometimes they think they're like, you're ridiculous. Like that's there, but that's like my, like, it's funny. It's a joke to an extent, but they know it bleeds to that. And they know it's because I have their backs and I will support them and drive that. So I think that's been a big difference maker, you know, and that's what I was talking about earlier, where it's like you create loyalty with people. You know, I've had people that have worked, you know, for me now 13, 14 years. Wow. You know, and it's like that the duration of my management career.
You know, right.
Two or three of them. And like that, I think
something right, man, for sure.
So it's a process. It's slow. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, if you go and you get hired and you inherit a team, don't expect them all to love you tomorrow. It takes time to build that, you know, trust and rapport. But, you know, if you put the effort into that time, you have the individual meetings, the team meetings, then that it will pay off. It's huge in the long run.
Right. It's not as fast moving as selling. You need a little more patience. Yeah. To see the path.
Which is tough for us in sales sometimes to have that. But it's, you know, it's something where, you know, like, it's, you know, to what you're saying, get a little bit better every day. That will compound day on day, day on day. And then all of a sudden you're looking back in a year, 18 months, and you're like, we got some real strong bonds here. I'm not worried about them leaving. I'm not leaving. We're all moving further.
Right. And the team keeps getting better every day.
Exactly.
Or month over month, you know. Cool, man. Tom, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is excellent stuff, I think. Yeah, it's really good stuff, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Derek. It's been fun, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll probably like the Next Level Private Mastermind. It's a small group of newish sales leaders who are helping each other grow faster and become better. Each week, we cover a specific topic and troubleshoot actual issues new leaders run into. The link is in the show notes, or go to derekjankowski.com/mastermind. Thanks.